Hi, and welcome to the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room for Radio Out of the Past. This is Thursday, February 1st, 2024. I'm John Gassman in for Larry. Larry has a dinner that he's attending with his church group tonight, and so he will be back a little later, but not in time for this meeting. Tonight, we'll talk about Old Time Radio probably or whatever for the next about 28, 29 minutes, and then I will be presenting tonight, and it will be, I'm trying to remember what I'm doing here, a comedy and a drama. That's what I'll tell you for the moment, and then we'll play it later on. But it's an hour's worth of show. In terms of old-time radio, on the air this week, tonight, at Yesterday USA, Walden and Patricia. I will be streaming them at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. And then after they finish their talk stuff, then Walden will play shows. Tomorrow, Bob Lyons will be back with us on Friday night and have no idea what we'll be talking about, but we'll figure it out before we get on the air. Or maybe when we're on the air, we'll figure it out. That's how it usually happens. We don't plan these things ahead of time. Something just comes up and we start talking. And 90 minutes later, we wrap up and move on. Saturday, Walden and Patricia, and then Sunday, we'll be back playing old-time radio shows. Don't believe there's a guest. I think Walden has a guest on tomorrow afternoon for about a half hour at around 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. And all of this on Yesterday USA Blue, and for the evening shows, The Red. On same time, same station, we have Howard McNear Part 7 coming your way, and that'll be on many of the stations beginning Sunday, and then Yesterday USA, I think, we'll have it beginning Monday. And on this week's show, we're going to do a little-known syndicated show called Diary of Fate from 1948. We will also do Let George Do It with Bob Bailey as George Valentine. Hopalong Cassidy from the syndicated date is 1948, and then they re-syndicated the shows in 1950. So you have your choice. You can either believe it to be 1948 or 1950. Same show, just different dates. And that's called Hoppy Takes a Chance. And then we'll finish things with Sweeney and March, and that will be also from 1948. So that's what's happening there. The Boston Blackie Kickstarter campaign is well underway. Last time I checked, which was 2 or 3 days ago, they were at 36% with a little under, I think it was 26,000 done. Yeah. So their goal is, I believe, 56,000. So it's less than the last one. Even though there are more shows, they need less money to do the transfer work this time around. So they're making good headway. I believe it's March 12 when the Kickstarter campaign finishes for Boston Blackie. So hopefully we'll know more about that soon, and we'll make the money that we need. And then all those there's about 50 new Boston Blackie shows that will come into circulation. Sound quality is just wonderful on the one that I've heard. So I expect good things, and let's hope that they make their goal for Kickstarter. And that's all I think we have, unless somebody else has something with regard to playing the shows. If not, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about for the next 25 minutes or so.
So is the sound quality really that great? I mean, is it awesome?
It is. Yeah, very crystal clear, no noise in the background. The discs were clean to begin with, but they did some things to just minimize any sound problems, and so it's crystal clear. Sounds like a brand new recording.
Wow!
So it's great. So if you Google Kickstarter Boston Blackie campaign, it'll take you where you need to be. They tell you the story of Boston Blackie and how the discs came to be and how many shows there were and when it started and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to make a pledge, you can certainly do that. So,
well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Do you know if I used to buy from them a lot, Radio Spirits, are they still in the game?
Yeah, they definitely are. They're still playing shows on the air, and they also have a, I believe they also have a sales catalog as well. So
But they're probably, I'm assuming they're probably not doing, they're not doing probably cassettes or anything like that, huh?
I would doubt it. I would guess that they're doing CDs, but I haven't purchased anything from them, so I don't know.
But even then, they're probably, or who knows, probably digital downloads by now.
I would think so. I haven't checked in a while, but they tend to do very good work. So it's all, but it is digital. That's where the technology is these days.
Right. And what's his name? Doesn't own them anymore, right? Amari?
No, he hasn't owned them in years.
Okay. Who owns them now? Do you know?
I think they've changed hands a couple of times. There was a book company that owned them for a while. I'm not sure who owns them at this point.
Okay.
But as we found out recently, when so many people were getting these cease and desist orders, those never came from Carl. They came from the owners later who bought it after Carl left. So, but Paul, Carl is the one who got the bad rap for issuing allegedly the cease and desist orders when in fact he didn't do it. It was whoever purchased them from Carl who did that. So, you know, just found that out fairly recently. I had no idea. Because
Okay.
back when we were doing stuff on the air, we would get something from Radio Spirits occasionally saying, stop doing this. And it wasn't Carl, it was the company that bought them from Carl. So, but you know, that shows you how well known the name was branded with the Radio Spirits, because he had done it for so long, when in truth it wasn't him at all. So he's working on this new Boston Blackie campaign. We'll probably have him on the air along with Doug over Yesterday USA at some point and talk more about it. But I think it's great that they're doing it, and if we can get enough people who pledge some of the money, then we'll have the shows and be
You
able to
know, might be
have circulate
interesting.
them.
You know what might be interesting as a, I mean, just a as a friendly suggestion or however you want to. Amari might be, I mean, if he's not that, that bad of a character, he might be a good guest on a marathon. Maybe.
But
I
yeah, that you
mean,
know, that's a good idea. That
throw it
is a
at
yeah, let's we'll
Larry, see
talk
what
to
he
Larry and
says.
Walden. Yeah, that would be a good idea because he could talk what he has talked about with us before on Yesterday USA, his work with Radio Spirits and preserving the shows. That's a good idea. I will write that down. Let's hope I don't forget to write that down.
Oh, don't worry. I'll remind you guys.
You
I'll
remind
remind
me,
you.
and when we'll have to do it probably for August, maybe.
Sure, yeah, or something. I mean,
Or whenever he's available, but no, that's a good idea.
I
And at the
mean,
same time, he can promote the whatever they're kickstarting at that time.
at that point, yeah, that would
Might
be.
be the I Was a Communist for the FBI series, because a lot of that exists in pretty good sound. But even though I had the discs for most of that, and they're pretty good sound, the work that Doug is doing with them would far surpass what I was able to do 25 years ago. So I would definitely go get these new ones, because they would be much, well, the sound that I have is pretty good, but these would be better. So
Okay. What about that is I Was a Communist? Is that the same thing as This Is Your FBI, or is that totally different?
no, totally different. I Was a Communist for the FBI was the show that Dana Andrews did, and really a suspenseful cliffhanger type show. You always thought he was going to get caught by the communists, but he always worked his way out of it. It was really a good show. This Is Your FBI was done with the cooperation of the FBI, and Jerry Devine produced and directed that show with a lot of wonderful people, both in New York, and then it later moved to Hollywood. So luckily, a lot of those exist as well,
Right.
in varying degrees of sound quality.
Not the entire series, I'm assuming.
No, I think there are some gaps, but a good chunk of it does exist. So, Spurback had access to a lot of the recordings that Jerry Devine gave us or loaned us, and so we were able to get really nice sound over. I don't remember now how many there were, probably at least a couple hundred.
Okay.
And some of the New York stuff exists as well, in 46, I think it is. And the FBI in Peace and War also is a different series, but a lot of that exists now as well. Not the whole run, but a pretty good amount of it.
Okay.
Maybe we should do an FBI show sometime. And
yeah, that'd be neat.
That would go an hour and a half, though, because you'd want to play one from each series. But that's okay. Maybe we'll do that sometime. Maybe that's a good marathon.
Yeah.
Show. So maybe I'll do one of those.
That's a good idea.
August, yeah. Mm. If I remember to write it down. Because this happens all the time where somebody says on Yesterday USA, hey, why don't you do this or that? Great idea. And then 4 weeks go by and Larry says to me, or I say to Larry, what the heck was that we were going to play? Because we didn't write it down.
Well, so, you can always say it's under advisement.
Yeah, I know, but that's
it's a good cop out, you know, if you need to.
Yeah, it is a good cop out, but some of these good ideas go by the wayside unless we can go back and find the show that they appeared on. We really ought to start a notepad file when somebody has an idea and just write it down. So, yeah.
Or the person with a suggestion could write it down and send it in an email. You know, that would be good too.
Yeah. So FBI shows and get Carl on show.
Yeah, that would be a good.
Okay, they are officially written down now, so they won't disappear into the ether or somewhere else.
No, don't worry. Even if you forget where you misplaced it, I'll remind you about the Carl thing especially.
Okay, well, I've got them written down, so I will try and I'll come up with a good title for the notepad file and remember that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anybody else have something they want to talk about radio-wise? We have a small group tonight, I think.
Yeah, we do. Did you guys ever interview Stacey Harris, or was he gone by the time you guys started?
He was around. I think he died in the early days when we first started collecting. I can't remember if we were interviewing at the time. Maybe not, because we probably would have tried to get him.
Yeah. I feel like a real dummy here, but who is Stacey Harris?
Stacey Harris was a well-known radio actor, did a lot of stuff in New York and Hollywood. And he was the lead agent on This Is Your FBI.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably where you'd remember him from.
Right. Probably so.
Yeah, but he also appeared on a lot of Dragnets.
Yeah, he did. And Escape and Suspense, a lot of the Hollywood shows. He was a fixture in Hollywood, especially.
I'm sure I've heard the voice.
Oh, yeah, you have. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm better at the voices than the names.
Yeah, when you hear a voice often enough, you remember the voice. I don't know why that is. And as you get older, then you forget the names sometimes.
Correct.
Okay.
Or at least I do, so.
Right. I forget everything.
Yeah, I forget more things now than I used to. I used to remember everything. But, you know, as you get older, and then if you're out of the hobby for a good deal of time, you just forget stuff. Some of it comes back when you need it, but not all of it.
True.
I mean, I don't remember some of the shows that we used to do anymore. If I hear it on a recording, then I do. But it's, you know, I just can't remember every guest or, you know, when we did things. Walden still remembers a lot of that stuff, but he's 12 years younger. So
I was thinking that Walden was probably younger than a lot of us.
Yeah, I think Walden is 56 or 7.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes a difference. I remember a whole lot more when I was in my 50s than I do now in my 70s, I'll tell you.
I mean, when you are busy doing hobby related stuff with radio and immersed in doing stuff on the air and interviews and stuff, a lot of it does come back, but not everything. Sometimes, you know, you just have to go look it up, which is what I end up doing. I don't remember nearly as much about the details as I used to. So I tend not to interview as much just because I can't remember a lot of that stuff. And I don't want to look like I could look it up ahead of time. I do homework ahead of time, but I don't remember it off the top of my head as well as I used to.
So you and John, before an interview, do you do a lot, research and take notes and write down what questions you're going to ask the particular interviewee? And how much work goes into what you guys do, for interviews?
If we have never interviewed the person before, then yeah, we do a lot of research and write down questions and be as prepared as we can be. If it's somebody we know really well and have interviewed thousands of times, then we may quickly outline some questions and kind of look at what they did in radio just to remind ourselves. But we don't do as much research as we do for the person that we've never met or never interviewed.
Oh, yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, because it comes back after a while with somebody that you know pretty well. So we tend not to do as much. We do a little.
I think it would be really cool. I'm not the person to do it, but I think it would be really cool if somebody sat you guys down on the other side of the table and interviewed you guys. I think that would be, there would be a whole lot of history and just all kinds of stuff, interviewing you and Larry. I mean, you've got years and years of experience and history behind the things that you have done. I think that would be so cool, but I'm not the one to do it.
It would take a while to do. I know Joe Webb has interviewed us for maybe 30, 40 minutes, but, they weren't in-depth type questions because he didn't have the time to do that. But if somebody wanted to do that, for the archives of the hobby, and not just us, but other people as well. I think that would be good to do in a historical type setting.
I think Marge is talking something here.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Everybody.
How are you, Tom?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
All right, guys. I'm going to... Alexa, stop. I'm going to step away here for a bit because my dinner bell has rang.
Okay.
But I'm sure you've got this, right, John? You can...
Oh, yeah. We're at 19 now, so we got another 10, 11 minutes to...
Yeah. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and make you a co-host, John.
Oh, okay.
And then you can, mute everybody and do what you got to do. If you want to do that, or, depending, I might be back in time. I'll let you know. Okay.
Where is the switch to mute everybody? Is it in the
hang on. Area? Hang on. Okay. No, it's Alt-M to mute everybody.
Oh, it is. Okay.
All right. Alt-M and then, yeah.
And then they can unmute at the point where we...
When you guys are done.
Talk a bin. Okay.
Yeah.
Alt-M. I'll remember that.
Yep.
So it's about 20 after. We got about 9 or 10 minutes. Anybody have anything else that they want to talk about? Or
has anybody heard from Jeremy? What's happening with her?
She was on the talking points for the blind shell this afternoon.
Oh, did she? Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was there. I haven't talked. We haven't talked, but she was there. So she's
she hasn't had any more to the hospital then lately. Then that's good.
Well, I don't know, in the last week or so, or 2 weeks or whatever, but she was home this afternoon. So, and she sounded good. So,
good. I'm glad to hear. I haven't talked to her myself in a little while, and she hasn't been on. She had gotten so when she could, she'd come on my call on Sunday mornings over on ACB, but she hadn't been there lately. So, I just wondering how she's making out.
Well, as far as I know, she's doing okay.
Cool. Thanks for the report.
I shall
go back to eat my din-din here. I had perch fish, and I had scalloped potatoes, and I got some stewed tomatoes sitting in front of me and some coleslaw. So,
well, good.
Yeah, I have not had dinner yet, but I probably will during the show. So
I had leftovers, and that they were good. So.
Yeah, leftovers are good usually. Josh runs the detector above the shallow premium depths around. somebody's got a television or something playing, or
oh, that's not yours, John?
No. Nope.
Okay. I wonder who's that is.
It's not automatic, mine. Automatic gain control bumps up the volume, so now it's gone. So
I still haven't gotten, I know this isn't radio related. Well, it kind of is. It's, you know, this is the internet and whatever, and it's all radio. I still haven't gotten, and I don't know that I really want to find it, but the update, I can still use the got it button. So I just keep using that good old got it button. For I
think eventually you will, you'll get it. Zoom will just send it to you when you open up Zoom someday.
Okay. Well, I'll let it do its thing. And I tell you
what happened to me when they first done that. I updated because that's what you're really supposed to do if you're a host. So, you know, you want to make sure you're using the latest version is what they tell you. So I went ahead and updated. I went into a call that I was supposed to host, and I quit knocking on mute. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? So somebody happened to remind me about the F6, and just by doing that, then I just kind of followed my nose, and I said, oh, okay, so that's what they're doing now. So that's what they're doing now. You hit F6, and you tap about three times, and you're on an okay button. You click that, and you're in like Finn.
Well, maybe I'll try.
It's not hard. It's just, you know.
Maybe I'll try it the next time I come into a Zoom room and mm-hmm. see if it happens. But, hey.
And actually, if you shift-tab back once, I think it's once, might be twice, the okay button is right there, and then you can press enter.
Oh.
So it's quicker to shift tab back once than it is to tab over three times.
Yeah. Sure. Well, that's like the guide button. Larry actually told me that. She's, you know, because I was tabbing. He said, "Well, if you just shift tab a couple times, you'll be right there, and it works."
Yeah, you will.
Well, okay. Yeah.
And that's only on Zoom. It's not for webinars, but it is for Zoom
right.
meetings, like what we're doing tonight.
Well, I have not even gotten, you know, because I used to get a thing saying, would you like to do the update? I haven't even gotten that.
Oh, so
I don't know, but.
Yeah, you probably should at some point. But
Whenever I host for something over on ACB, in a community, I always go in and where it says check for updates. And sometimes it'll say I have one, and most times I don't, you know.
If I go in, because I always go in from the link, whatever link I've got. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm using this old link that I got from Alan a couple of years ago because mm-hmm. I didn't, the announcement from Alan didn't come out this week. So I've just been using this old link. So I don't even know where I would go to check for updates, actually.
What you would do is you go to you find your name, you tap through and get your name, and you can open up a drop down box, a combo box.
My name.
You should see it.
Miss Marcia.
Yes, sir.
Marcia Mello. I'm still using the got it button too.
Oh, okay. Well, that is good to know, Rick.
Remember last week's presentation with Scott Keith that Larry and John and Walden did? They mentioned something that you might remember. Chuck Doherty. Do you remember? I think, wasn't he doing the midnight show on Wixie?
Yes, he was. When I was very, very young, but yes.
He would have been, because I was only about 10. So I couldn't remember if it was the All Night Satellite or East of Midnight, and I thought it was the All Night Satellite.
I don't remember the name. I don't remember the name of the program, but I remember his name.
Yeah.
Chuck Doherty on 1270. Yeah.
You betcha, the best station on the dial.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, aren't we old?
It's okay. You're much younger than me. You can get away. Thanks for letting me know I wasn't being as senile as I am, because you remember it too.
Yeah, I do.
Good. Thank you.
I mean, and I was not supposed to be up listening that late, you know. Oh, boy. Yeah, well, you know.
This would be during my summers in Windsor, and my grandmother and I were just getting ready to get into bed about the time he came on.
Oh, okay. Well,
Together, by the way.
I was in supposed to be asleep way, way, way earlier than that, but I always had a problem with sleep. But oh well, that's how it is.
You probably
But
listened to Jack Sorrell in the penthouse on top of the town too.
no, that one I don't remember.
I think it was on Wixie as well, but anyway, I won't hold people up of serious stuff. Thanks, Marsha. I feel better. I'll sleep better tonight thinking of you.
Oh well, thank you, and I'll sleep better too. Same reason, thinking of you. And say hi. I heard Denise in the background say hi. Well, hi, Denise.
No, actually it didn't, but
I thought I did.
no, she's been in bed for a while. Her brother
Oh.
came in last night about 6 o'clock from Vancouver. He's going to be with us for a while to help things out.
Oh,
They
good.
stayed up talking till about 6:30 this morning. So you know how much sleep they got. So they've been
Not much.
sleeping all day long.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it is actually.
And I can't remember if we mentioned last week, Chuck is pretty close to being 100 years old.
You
He's
have to
still
be.
living?
Yeah, he is.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he's been on Yesterday USA, and I think he was at either Spurtback or Reps. Walden and Larry would remember, but yeah, he's still around and in pretty good shape.
That's great to know. 100 years old coming up.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
It is.
Just
Gee,
about
I'm always talking.
2 minutes away from doing the show, the
See,
radio show.
we
So
filled up the minutes.
yeah, we did. And it went by pretty quickly too.
It did. Well, you want to just go ahead and do it? I mean,
We can
what
do
the heck?
that. Yep. So this runs, I think, about 58 minutes. So we'll start it. Oh, I got to mute everybody, don't I?
I'm going to mute.
Okay. If you guys just want to mute, go ahead. That's okay, and I'll just stay unmuted. So go ahead and mute, and then we'll begin. It is almost 5:29. That's close enough. So I'm going to go ahead and start the 1 hour, 58-minute show, and then we'll come back after that and chat some more. Thank you, and welcome to Radio Out of the Past. Tonight we salute two greats from radio, Carlton E. Morse and Orson Welles. Orson Welles appears in just about a half hour. We'll tell you more about that then. But right now, we're going to go back and listen to Carlton E. Morse in a lesser-known show, which really should have gotten more kudos than it did. It's called I Love Adventure, and it's a 13-part show in 13 weeks that brings back the characters of Isle of Mystery. And it really takes them during their time in World War II and brings them to adventure. So we'll hear the first episode in that series right now. This is from April 25th, 1948, and I Love Adventure.
International incident number one. Jack Packer, from whatever corner of the world you may be in at the moment, you're hereby being summoned to London in a matter of the gravest expediency. Signed, the 21 old men of 10 Gramercy Park. I love adventure. The American Broadcasting Company presents a new Carlton E. Morse production, featuring the international escapades of Jack Packard, Doc Long, and Reggie York. Tonight's incident is entitled The China Coast Incident. That's the message I received at the American Consul's office in Port Said at 7 o'clock yesterday morning. Jack Packard, from whatever corner of the world you may be in at the moment, you're hereby being summoned to London in a matter of the gravest expediency. Signed, the 21 old men of 10 Gramercy Park. There it was. And here I am on the last lap of my journey up from Liverpool to London. I could have flown right into Croydon Field and been there by this time, except for one of those grisly, greasy black fogs of London. However, I'll be there in good time, even so. And now, who are the 21 old men of 10 Gramercy Park? Who are they? I've never seen any mention of them in the papers. They certainly have had no rumor value in official circles, no conversational value in social circles, no scandal value in high places. And yet, when I gave some slight indication of putting the radiogram down as a practical joke from either Doc Long or Reggie York, wherever they might be in the world today, suddenly there was pressure all about me. A gentle hint from this quarter, a subtle warning from that quarter, an over-eagerness to help me get on my way to London. Nobody ever came out and said, I know the 21 old men of 10 Gramercy Park, and you'd be wise to obey them. Nobody even mentioned the 21 old men. But it took me less than an hour after I got this message to get the idea and bestir myself. And here I am, plunging through the dripping, grimy tunnel of fog, only minutes from Piccadilly Station. I wish Doc Long and Reggie York were waiting at the end of this trip. I even wish I had the faintest notion where they are. We broke up the A1 detective agency out in Hollywood when Pearl Harbor came along. Reggie made a beeline for the Royal Air Force back in England. I'd get cheerful messages by way of returning American ferrying pilots, and then I lost him. Doc Long got himself a job with the Flying Tigers over in China. Then he became a P-38 fighter pilot in the last phase of the war. Then he just fell out of sight. I'd always meant to get over that way one of these days and put a tracer on Doc, but up to now I've been chivvied about by American intelligence until I haven't been able to call my soul my own. The fact that I've been completely released from all intelligence work to meet the 21 old men in itself is one of the marvels of modern times. Well, better get my luggage. Train's slowing down.
Major Jack Packard?
Uh-oh, here it is.
Major Jack Packard? Major Jack?
Yeah, what is it?
You're Major Jack Packard?
That's right.
Very good, Major. We're entering the station. I shall have the pleasure of conducting you to your destination.
Is that necessary?
Oh, watch yourself, sir. Come along, sir. There's no time for conversation. Headed straight for the lion's den at once, sir. This way, please.
Did I hear you correctly? Did you say lion's den?
That you did. The lion's den, alias 10 Gramercy Park. This is as far as I go, sir.
Oh?
Go right in, sir. Make yourself comfortable.
Walk right into the lion's den, eh?
It's all right, sir. Walk right in. Bye, sir.
Amazing. A regular cathedral of a room. Two, three stories to the ceiling, dimly lit by the tall, leaded, dome-like windows in which the color and pageantry of the ages have been done by some exquisite artist. Tapestries on the wall, period furniture in richness and luxury known only to a fabulous oriental monarch someplace down the corridors of history. What's this? Suddenly, before my eyes, a great tapestry which covers the whole of one end of the room is rolling back. And there before my eyes is the greatest mirror I've ever seen. 40 feet across, 60 feet to the ceiling. A flawless mirror, reflecting every item of color and beauty all over again. And there I am, repeating myself in the glass. Hello, a voice.
To you, the West Wall is a mirror. To the 21 old men seated in the room behind it, the West Wall is a window through which we not only enjoy the great beauty of the room you stand in, but can examine you with infinite care, so that we may know you from this time on, but without you knowing anything of us.
Are you able to hear me?
We hear you.
Why am I here?
You are needed.
Who are you?
That you will never know.
Then I want to get out of here.
Wait!
There's no use. For all I know, you may be a criminal gang. You may be the instigators of war. You could be anything. With as much money and power at your disposal as this setup indicates you have.
Yes, we have money and power.
Only official government should be allowed
to... You have been a citizen of the world for a great many years. In your young manhood, you studied to be a physician.
Well, here I...
Oh, yes. We know that. We know why you were never able to complete your medical education.
Now, just a minute.
Is not meant as a threat nor a warning, because when we complete this interview, You are free to go as though you'd never been called in. We simply want you to understand that we know everything there is to know about you. You were a freebooter in South America. You and your later companions, Doc Long and Reggie York, were members of the Chinese National Army when the first Japanese incident took place years ago. You had a detective agency in Hollywood.
That's right.
During the war, you have been with United States Intelligence. We know your work there, and it is because of your wide knowledge, not only of formal negotiation, but of rough and tumble undercover fighting, that you have been assigned to us at our request.
By U.S. Intelligence?
Yes.
Well, that should be good enough, but I want to know more.
You know that in this world of chaos, which is our heritage out of World War II, there is banditry and piracy and madness abroad in every land.
Yeah.
You know that much of it is too delicate, too touchy for the official government of any nation to handle. A formal government could plunge its country into new wars overnight if it even looked in certain directions today. But much can be done undercover, beneath the surface. Much can be done by 21 old men, each representing the country of his nativity. We are men who would do for the people of the world what their own governments know should be done, but cannot do, because their hands are tied.
Well, in that case, count me in.
That is well. Sir James, will you give Major Packard his first assignment?
There is a man somewhere in French Indochina, in the area of Saigon, who is a great man, a fine scientist. He is either a prisoner of international gangsters, or he is a man in hiding. He has the knowledge of a destructive force, which placed in the hands of the wrong people, would mean murder and slaughter for half the world. He is a friend of democratic people. We want him, and we want his scientific knowledge. We cannot have it. It must not fall into the wrong hands at any cost.
The man's name?
Dr. Alfred Wentz.
When can I leave?
A plane takes off for the Orient in exactly 1 hour. You will be aboard it.
In this pea soup fog?
London's pea soup fog will be one of the very minor obstacles of this assignment. Step outside. There is a batman waiting to deliver you to your mission.
The refugee liner Viking, out of Saigon with its load of frightened, nondescript humanity, gleaned from the chaotic whirlpool of Indochina hate and strife, is in the China Sea, 300 miles off the island of Hong Kong. On this last lap of my assignment, after 7 hectic and nerve-shattering days in the back alleys of Saigon and 4 days at sea, I was on the promenade deck consoling a good-looking Scandinavian girl. Take it easy, honey. Take it easy.
Oh, but Mr. Packard.
Listen, Frida, anything can happen on this screwball ferry boat.
Oh, but that was a shot.
Chinese firecracker. Somebody let off a pop gun. Let the bridge worry about it.
That piece of paper I handed you tonight at dinner. You got it?
Yeah. One word. Pirates.
Yes. One of the evil ones is aboard this ship. One of their cleverest and brightest. I noticed him the second day out.
And so you think he's after someone on this tub, huh?
I do not think Mr. Jack Packard. I know.
Who?
Me.
And how does a good-looking young woman know so much about piracy in the China Sea?
Because I have escaped from them just in time. If I had not escaped when I did, I would be on their secret island hideout now.
Well, that sounds fine. So my favorite gang is trailing you, the girl who was the toast of the Malay Peninsula. If you know so much, just what does this monkey look like?
He is tall, heavy set, with gray hair, and a scar on his left cheek. I tell you, Mr. Packard, he is after me. I'm afraid to go out of my cabin after I've seen him.
You know his name?
Yes. Houseman.
Yeah, you're cooking. I almost believe you. The poor guy whose papers he's traveling on is dead in a Saigon alley. But Frida, take it from me, they're not trailing you. They're after bigger stuff.
So? Then what I hear is true. Dr. Wentz is on this ship.
You think so?
Yes. All Indochina boiled with the news of his escape from the enemy's clutches, and everybody knows you helped him escape.
Okay, why did I help him?
You ask me, Mr. Packer. All Saigon knew that also. Dr. Wentz is the inventor of the most important formula developed since the war. His formula is the most deadly force yet conceived. Wentzite.
Go to the head of the class, baby. Now, do you think these pirate roughnecks are chasing you?
I think first Dr. Wentz, then you, then me. We are all in this together.
Maybe you got something there. Maybe you are on our team.
Believe me, Mr. Packard, I am. I am.
If you're right about this enemy agent prowling around here, we got no time to waste. You to come with me.
Where?
To my cabin. But if it should happen that you're on the wrong team, I can be very mean to little girls, especially little dames from the Saigon underworld. Just a second while I turn on a light.
Oh, yes.
Get in here, quick. Lock that door.
Oh, mon Dieu, look at this cabin.
Yeah, somebody was looking for something and really wrecked the joint. Dr. Wentz! Hey, doctor, open the door.
So it is true, Dr. Wentz is with you.
You wouldn't know about that, would you? If I thought you were holding me up there on deck while this mug was working on
that... Oh, no, I swear it, no.
Oh, I'll figure that one myself. Stand back so I can crash down this door. Charlie.
Oh, no.
Doctor, they really must you
up. Oh, the poor man.
Water and towels, quick.
Oh, this is wicked, so wicked.
Doctor, can you hear me? Doctor. Hey, it's me, Packard. Can you hear me?
Look at his feet and his fingers.
Sure, he's been tortured. Must have thought they killed him and then ripped up the cabin looking for the formula.
Packard, everything's all right.
Take it easy, Doctor, take it easy. Just give me a token in answer to my question. Just nod or shake your head, can you? Okay.
Oh, the poor man. Here, I'll soothe his burns.
Doctor, how many of them were there? One? Was that all? Did they find your formula? No? Well, couldn't he have found it when you were unconscious?
He is shaking his head.
Hey, careful there, you're hurting him.
I am being as gentle as I can.
Okay, Doctor. Then where is it? Can you tell me? They sure worked you over, didn't they? I'll take care of that Jolly Roger for you, don't worry.
You want your gun?
You don't want my gun, Doc. You... Doctor. Yeah. There's a good guy gone. Must have hurt plenty right there. You see him try to grab for my gun.
It's a great Dr. Wentz to die like that. It is too terrible.
You better get out of here and go back to your own cabin. If that butcher didn't find what he was after, he'd be coming back.
Oh, but I cannot go alone.
Okay, I'll take you to the cabin. But stay parked there, please. I got to get back here and find that formula.
Oh, yes, Mr. Packard. Anything to help.
Call me Jack, will you, sweetheart? That Mr. Stuff gets me down. I guess I'm licked. Why didn't the doctor tell me where the formula was hidden when I asked him to so many times? One thing I can do, I'll put a dragnet around this tub when we reach Hong Kong that these parts will never get through. Well, I guess this recipe for the super explosive just isn't in here. Maybe it's in my little joint next door.
Sorry to interrupt your little soliloquy, my Hamlet-minded friend.
Why, you...
Keep your hand away from that gun. I don't want to shoot you yet. Later, yes, but not yet.
How'd you get in here, Houseman?
The charming mademoiselle, when she told you my name.
That's right.
Behind that wardrobe is a door into the next cabin. I arranged most carefully to get that cabin. The poor fellow who had it found it quite impossible to leave Saigon.
Well, that's one right guess I made.
Just so you won't be tempted to reach for that gun, Packer. Unbuckle the shoulder holster without touching the gun. Drop it to your feet. Now, kick it with your foot. Ah, that's splendid, splendid. Now you may sit down if you wish.
Thanks. Do I take off my shoes and socks so you can give me the regulation hot foot, or do you go for the splinters under the fingernail routine?
No. I have a better argument to use with you.
I'm listening, but I don't hear so well.
Well, it would be most unfortunate if you do not hear, for you and a lot of other people. I believe you can find that formula if you want to, badly enough. And I think I can make it very important for you to find it.
If I didn't know you were a bunch of waterfront scum and wharf rats, I'd think you were drunk. So I say no and you shoot me. Is that right?
You say no and I shoot you. You say yes and find the formula.
Yeah, and I get to join you and become Captain Kidd himself.
No. I still shoot you. But if you don't find that formula, the 1,100 passengers on the ship will die tonight.
That's ridiculous.
You think so? Once I get my hands on the formula, you don't think for 1 minute I will continue on this ship into Hong Kong, do you?
You're to be taken off by another ship?
A submarine.
You say pirates have a submarine?
Is that so amazing?
Brother, I gotta hand it to you, Tuffy. You play rough.
Well, what is your decision, Herr Packer?
Well, looks like it's heads you win, tails I lose, I guess, if there's 1,100 people to think about. 1,100 people on a refugee ship as hostages. Your kind is always making a sort of specialty of hostages, aren't you?
We have found them useful, thank you.
Well, that's one word for it, but skip it. Tell me this. Suppose I make an honest effort and don't find the formula. Why should all these people die tonight?
Because the formula is on this ship somewhere, probably in these two rooms. If the Wendt's formula cannot be found, the ship must be destroyed. You see, we do not intend that the organized free countries shall have it.
Organized free countries?
Yes. We are against all people who live under a formal government. We are at war with all of you, although you may not realize it yet.
You don't say.
Well, what's it to be?
Well, if it were a question of my skin alone, I'd tell you where to go.
Yes, I am sure of that.
But you know I can't let 1,100 men, women, and children burn and drown.
Then you agree?
Yes, yes, I agree, but I'm humiliated. I thought I was good, but you outfigured and outmaneuvered me into an impossible situation.
Packer, you don't know the perfection of our planning. Everything is provided for.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this submarine business.
Precisely. A rendezvous at 12 o'clock tonight. There will be a moon.
You thought of that? Wonderful. Joshua made the sun stand still, and your boss makes the moon shine.
Do not speak lightly of our leader.
Forget it. If everything goes well, you get the formula. The sub takes you off, and this boat gets the green light.
That is the plan. But if I arrive at the sub without the formula, the ship will be sunk without a trace or a survivor.
Yes, but suppose something happened to you so you couldn't signal the sub.
Then their orders are to sink the ship without warning.
How about that? You think of everything.
Yes, yes. Now, you have only a little more than an hour and a half to find the formula. I can tell you something that might help you.
What's that?
I have already searched this cabin, but it may be in a very tiny space. We learned that Wendt had reduced his papers to microfilm. The man who did it for him confessed. We had him shot, of course.
Thanks a lot. Every little bit helps. Now, let's see. A roll of microfilm could go in almost any...
Stop! What's that?
Jack!
You gotta take a gander at a pretty dame. Maybe that'll teach you super gangsters to keep your minds on your work, eh? It's okay, Frieda. Come in.
Oh, are you all right, Jack? Oh, you killed him?
No, I'm saving him for hanging. Hand me the straps off the suitcases, will you?
Yes, Mr. Pat. All right, Jack.
Go see the captain, Frieda, and no one else. Tell him to send a couple of husky sailors down here to watch this rat. As soon as they get here, I'll go up on the bridge and give him the payoff. And say nothing of what's going on down here except to him.
All right, Jack. I go.
Yeah, that ought to hold you. I won't gag you because I can hardly wait to hear what you say when you open those big baby blue eyes. Here you come, out of the nowhere into the here.
You fool. Now all of us will have to die on account of you.
Relax, sweetheart, relax. The unexpected certainly throws you supermen, doesn't it? That's the story, Captain. It's 10:30 now. How far from Hong Kong are we?
250 miles out.
About 80 minutes flight by plane. It's going to be close, Skipper.
Oh, here's the radio operator.
Okay, Sparks, here's a message. Get it out to the Royal Naval Air Station at Kowloon and hurry.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to suggest, Skipper, that you hold general quarters and lifeboat drill at 11:45. If those planes don't get here, we're in for it. No use telling the passengers until we have to.
Right. Mr. Vogel, you see that's done? Mr. Anderson.
Yes, Captain.
Signal the engine room to reduce speed to 6 knots.
Aye, aye, sir.
Just a second. Hold it, Anderson.
Yes, sir.
Well, what is it, Packard?
Skipper, I think you ought to maintain speed and course as it is.
Why should I risk my ship and passengers to keep a date with the submarine?
I don't think the sub is waiting for us, Skipper. I think she's been trailing us. Any change in speed or course without a signal from their agent aboard would really gum the works.
Yeah, you have something there. Mr. Anderson, maintain speed and course.
Aye, aye, sir.
Well, here comes the moon, just as Captain Kidd ordered. Nothing to do now but wait and hope those planes get here in time. 11 o'clock. Plenty of clouds now. Our human sharks are going to be awful sore about that.
Yes, radio? What is it?
Miss it, sir.
Royal Naval Air Station. Planes away, 2242. Good luck.
2242. That's 18 minutes before 11. Only hope they got plenty of tailwind.
Mr. Mate! Mr. Mate, what is it?
Yeah, what's going on here?
Lifeboat drill, madam. Wear your life vest, please.
Oh, it's ridiculous waking us up at 11:30 for a lifeboat drill.
It's outrageous. Might as well stay up for the rest of the night.
Well, it wouldn't be so bad if they'd open the bar.
Where's number 3 lifeboat, officer?
Port side forward, madam.
Which is port side, right or left?
Left side, going forward.
Oh, why don't sailors speak English?
Almost the zero hour.
Yeah. You got a sailor who speaks German, Captain?
Yes, why?
I want him to relieve the two men guarding Hausmann.
I don't get it.
I want him to say something to Hausmann in German and then let nature take its course.
Mr. Anderson, tell Keller to step out here on the bridge.
Yes, sir.
I still don't understand.
You will in a minute.
Here's Keller, sir.
Say, Keller, I want you to relieve two men who are guarding a prisoner in my cabin. Mr. Anderson will show you where it is.
Yes, sir.
When you're alone with him, say something to him in German, like, something like, if I turn you loose, will you take me with you? If he agrees, and believe me, brother, he will, then unstrap him and let him scram.
What's the matter, Packard? Are you insane?
No, Skipper. It's 11:45. If that sub surfaces and doesn't get a signal and code from Hausmann, it'll torpedo us without warning, and we don't have the code.
I get you.
And if I know my pirate history, they'll be nervous. They'll want their signal at exactly 12 o'clock, or they'll start shooting. Our planes might be late. The sub will send a boat to take Hausmann off, and I want that extra time.
Yes. Keller, carry out Mr. Packard's instructions.
Yes, sir.
Almost 12 o'clock.
Yeah. I'm positive that Hausmann had tried to save his own hide.
Here comes Keller.
I did what you said, sir. He ducked into the next cabin, grabbed a flashlight, and ran out into the corridor.
Good.
Before he ran out, he gave me this for myself, sir.
Well, you keep it. You deserve it.
I don't think I do, sir.
What is it?
An American $1 bill with a swastika stamped on it. He said to show it in the Hong Kong Bazaar, and I will be given safe conduct to their headquarters.
How about that? O'clock, Captain.
There's the signal off the starboard beam.
Yeah, now watch for the answer.
There it is. Forward on B deck.
Let's get a couple of men on B deck. Don't grab Hausmann, but don't let him get out of sight. There's their searchlight. And they've got their deck gun manned.
They're firing across our bow. Signal the engine room to stop the engine, Mr. Anderson.
Yes, sir.
Ahoy the Viking!
He knows us all right.
You will heave to. I am sending a boat aboard. Any resistance, and you will be sunk.
Oh, where are those planes?
They're putting a rubber boat off the sub starboard.
Yeah, talk about piracy on the high seas. Here comes the boarding party. It won't be long now. Hey, listen.
I don't hear anything.
Me either. But it was a nice thought, Skipper.
Quiet.
Planes.
Yeah.
Planes. The pirates hear them, too. There goes their searchlight.
Yeah, where are you going?
Down to B deck. There's one shark I want to take care of personally. Hey, where is he, Keller?
Over there. Climbing over the rail.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He jumped. Did you get him?
I don't know. That last shot missed fire.
Something's dropping.
Oh, look. Where?
There it is. It's as bright as day.
The boat. There
you'll never make it.
The sub's going to crash dive.
Too late. Here comes the first depth shot.
That got her, I think.
Yes. Yes, they got her. Yes. They got the rubber boat, too.
Straight down.
Here we are, nearly at the Royal Naval Station, Jack.
Ah, what's that?
I say we are nearly at Kowloon.
Yeah, so we are, and I hate to check in. Poor old Dr. Wentz. I sure fluffed this one.
Oh, everybody fails once, Jack.
Yeah, even this gat of mine misfired on me once. Hey, wait a minute.
What are you going to do with that gun?
Why didn't I think of that before? Dr. Wentz wasn't the kind of man to kill himself. When he reached for my gun, he was trying to tell me. Here it is. A little cartridge that didn't go off. And the bullet comes out. And there it is. The microfilm and the formula for Wentzite.
Kowloon. Kowloon, next up.
This night in Hong Kong may well be something for you to remember.
Is that a promise?
Perhaps.
This Oriental Sing Song Palace isn't a bad starting place. How about another one of those little green drinks with shaved
Jack,
ice?
That man, the little Chinese in uniform over there, he's looking at you. He's coming to our table.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my pardon, you Major Jack Pocket?
Check.
Radiogram for you. Please sign here.
Thanks. Here.
No, monsieur. Thank you. Excuse me.
It is important.
The London Bombay Air Express will be robbed in mid-air on Sunday next. Report to London immediately. Signed, the 21 old men of 10 Gramercy Park.
But not tonight. Just this one night.
How about that? Not even one night in Hong Kong with the girlfriend. And how do you rob a mail plane in mid-air? Will you tell me that?
You have just heard I Love Adventure, a Carlton E. Morse production featuring Michael Raffetto as Jack Packard. Next week, The Great Airmail Robbery, an epic adventure 23,000 feet in the stratosphere. Frida was played by Gene Bates. Houseman was played by John McIntyre. The spokesman by Everett Glass. The captain by Russell Thorson. Others in the cast included Tom Collins, Earl Lee, Janet Logan, and Harry Lang. The China Sea Incident was written by Carlton E. Morse with John Paul Schofield. Organ by Rex Curry. Your announcer, Dresser Dahlstedt. Now, a listening reminder. For an unusual story, one you'll never forget, don't miss The Clock. The Clock will be heard at its new time starting tonight over this same ABC station. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
I Love Adventure, from the 25th of April, 1948. There were 13 shows in that very brief series, and they're all out in circulation. So if you don't have them yet, they're easily obtainable. And we hope you enjoyed that one. First show of the series. We're going to move along now to Orson Welles, another great from radio, and this is a show he did in a brief series called Mercury Lady Esther Theater. And this is a show called My Little Boy, and it features Dix Davis, whom we lost just recently. So we're going to go back and hear that one for you right now. This runs about 26 minutes from January 16, 1942.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles, bringing you another radio show for Lady Esther. Trying to begin with, I'd like to point out that here's an interesting fact. These few moments, the ones that are ticking off as I speak to you now, impression. Well, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I want to use this crucial time for a crucial reminder. Briefly, here it is. Don't forget to buy defense bonds and stamps this week and every week. Each dollar, each dime is a weapon against the forces of fascist barbarism and intolerance. And now about this program. Tonight's story is in its own right a weapon against intolerance, besides which it's one of the finest things we've ever found for radio. No other broadcast of the Mercurys has been called for again by so many listeners. It's titled, My Little Boy. Just a minute, we'll be ready to do it for you, but there's something else I'd like you to hear first. It's from one of our best-known beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
Very often a doctor will say to a patient, what you need is more exercise. Now, most people know that they need exercise and they try to get as much as they can. But what many people do not know is that the skin needs exercise too. Yes, your skin needs exercise just like any other part of your body. And if it doesn't get it, well, it becomes lazy and sluggish. And before you know it, the little mouths of the pores are blocked, and soon your skin becomes dry and flaky. You begin to notice blackheads, big pores, even hard little lumps in your skin. What can you do about it? Well, every time you use Lady Esther four-purpose face cream, you help give your skin the exercise it needs. Because, you see, Lady Esther face cream does not one, but four important things for your skin. Not only does it thoroughly cleanse your skin and remove the stubborn dirt from the mouths of the pores, but it's especially designed to work with nature and help to restore your skin to its normal activities. Women say it's thrilling, really thrilling, to see how Lady Esther four-purpose face cream seems to wake up the skin. Many of them say it makes their skin look younger and smoother than it's looked in years, and after very few applications, too. So start using Lady Esther face cream. See how this one cream by itself helps keep your skin looking its youngest and loveliest. It's all you need for the care of your skin. Lady Esther four-purpose face cream.
My little boy is beginning to live. Carefully, stumbling now and then on his little knock-kneed legs, he makes his way through the world, looks at everything that there is to look at, and bites at every apple. Both those which are his due and those which are forbidden him. He's not a pretty child, but he's charming. His face can light up suddenly and become radiant. He can look at you with quite cold eyes. He has a strong intuition and he is incorrect. Corruptible. He has never yet bartered a kiss for candy. He has bad habits, too. He's apt, for instance, suddenly and without the slightest reason to go up to people whom he meets in the street and hit them with his little stick. What's in his mind when he does so, I don't know. As long as he doesn't hit me, it remains a matter between himself and the people concerned. He has an odd trick of seizing some word in a grown-up commotion under a mighty tussle. Later, when we're sitting together, breathless and tired, I give him his answer. Life is delightful, my little boy. My little boy comes into my room and tells me with a very long face that John is dead. And we put all nonsense aside and hurry away to the train to go where John is. For John is the biggest dog that has lived in some time. When we get there, we hear that John is already buried. We look at each other. Dismay to think how quickly that happens. We go to the grave, which is in the grounds of a factory where the tall chimneys stand. We sit down and can't understand it. We tell each other all the stories that we remember of John's wonderful size and strength. As each story is told, the whole thing becomes only... His eyes light upon some tall chimneys.
That's where John is buried.
Yes. The landscape flies past. He can think only of that. Little boy. Those are John's chimneys.
While he's looking out again, I take the old gentleman to the furthest corner of the car. You see, my friends, in years to come, if I live, I hope to explain to the boy the difference between Peterson's factory and Hansen's factory, and if I should die, I'll confidently leave that part of his education to others. Even if he never learns the difference, sir, I'd still be resigned. Today it's a question of other and more important matters. The strongest, the most living thing that little boy knew is dead.
Oh, really? A relation, perhaps?
Yes, John is dead, a dog.
Dog?
Well, it's not because of the dog, don't you understand? It's because of death, which he's seeing for the first time. Death with all its might, its mystery.
Father, when do we die?
When we grow old.
No. Carl has a brother at home in the courtyard. And he's dead, and he was only a little boy.
Then Carl's brother was so good and learned such a lot that he already... He was fit to go to heaven.
Well, mind you, don't become too good. I give my little boy a pat on the stomach, and he laughs and laughs and goes back to the window. Where new chin is, rise over John's boy again. I give up trying to make him understand me. I just shake him. He eyes the emergency cord. When we reach the station, he hurries away. I go with my little boy holding his hand through the streets full of life. In the evening, I sit on the edge of his bed and talk with him about that incomprehensible thing. John, who is dead. John, who is so much alive. So strong. So big. My little boy is given a dime by Mary, the cook, with instructions to go to the baker's and buy some rolls. I stand at my window and see him cross the street in his slow way with bent head, only he goes slower than usual, with his head bent more deeply between his small shoulders. He stands long outside the baker's window where there's a confused heap of all-day suckers and chocolates and peppermint sticks. Then he lifts his hand, opens the door, disappears, and presently returns with a paper bag, eating with all his might. And I, who heaven be praised, have myself been a thief in my time, go all over the house and give my orders. My little boy enters the kitchen.
Put the rolls on the table.
You're quite a big boy now that you can buy rolls for Mary.
His face is very long, but he says nothing. He comes quietly into me and sits on the edge of a chair.
Hello.
Hello. You've been over the way at Baker's? What'd you buy at the baker's?
Peppermints.
Well, you had some peppermints this morning. Well, Mary's certainly fond of you. Do you remember the lovely ball she gave you for your birthday?
Father, Mary told me to buy a dime's worth of rolls.
Oh, dear. It's very quiet in the room. My little boy cries bitterly, and I look anxiously before me and stroke his hair. You fooled Mary badly. She wanted those rolls, of course, for our dinner. She thinks they're on the kitchen table. When she goes to look, she won't find them. Mother gave her a dime for rolls. Mary gave you a dime for rolls. And you go and spend it on peppermints. What are you going to do? If only we had a dime, then you could rush across the street and fetch the rolls.
Father, there's a dime on Mother's writing table.
Oh, is there really? Well, I'm afraid that's no use to us, my little boy. That dime belongs to Mother. The other was Mary's. People are so terribly fond of their money and get so angry when you take it away from them. I understand that, for you can buy such an awful lot of things with money. You can get bread and ice cream and toys and clothes and half the things in the world. And it's not so easy to make money. Now, Mary, she has to spend the whole day cleaning rooms and cooking dinner and washing up before she gets her wages. And out of that, she has to buy clothes and shoes. And, you know, she has a little girl and she has to pay for it, Mrs. Olson. She must certainly have saved very cleverly before she managed to buy you that ball for your birthday.
Father, haven't you got a dime?
Here's my purse. Look for yourself. There's not a penny in it. Spent the last this morning. We walk up and down. We sit down, get up, and walk about again. We're very gloomy. Well, there might be one hidden away in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe we could find a dime.
Here's one. Hooray!
Hooray!
Father, a dime, a dime! time.
Yes, now hurry. Now you go this way through the door, then run back quickly up the kitchen stairs with the rolls and put them on the table. I'll call Mary so that she doesn't see him and won't tell anybody. He's down the stairs before I've done talking. I run after him. Hey there! Wasn't it a splendid thing we found that dime?
Yes!
And he laughs for happiness, and I laugh too, and his legs go like drumsticks across the baker's. From my window, I see him come back running with red cheeks and glad eyes. He's committed his first crime. He's understood it. He has not the sting of remorse in his soul, nor the black badge of forgiveness on his cap. The mother of my little boy and I sit until late at night talking about money, which seems to us the most difficult matter of all. For our little boy must learn to know the power of money and the glamour of money and the joy of money. He must earn much money and spend much money.
That there were two people yesterday who killed a man to rob him of $4. $4.37.
My little boy is engaged to be married. She's a big, large-limbed young woman, 3 years his senior. Her name is Gertie. By misunderstanding, however, which is pardonable at his age and moreover quite explained by Gertie's appearance, he calls her Dirty. Little Dirty. By this name, she will be handed down to history.
I wanted a girl for myself.
Quite right, my boy. Come in, Dirty, and be welcomed by the family.
Wipe your feet, Dirty.
The mother of my little boy doesn't think much of the match.
Why, she's a perfectly dreadful little thing. I've a good mind not to let her in the house.
Do you remember what little use it was when your mother forbade me to the house? We used to meet the most incredible places and kiss each other terribly. I can quite understand that you've forgotten, but you ought to bear it in mind now that your son's beginning to...
My dear.
Besides, I must remind you that it is spring. Dirty is paying us a visit. My little boy is sitting at her feet. She's buried her fingers in her hair and is reading.
Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his
The boy
master.
Watches her with tender compassion. Then he comes to me.
Father, must Dirty do all the Ten Commandments say?
Yes.
Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt honor thy father and mother, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house nor his father. When I grow big, must I do all the Ten Commandments say?
Yes.
Father, do you do all the Ten Commandments say?
Yes.
Father, I don't believe that I can do all those things that the Ten Commandments say.
There's a great hullabaloo among the children in the courtyard. I hear them shouting something, and I go to the window and see my little boy in the front rank of the ruffians, screaming, fighting. I know he'll come up before long. Tell me about it. Presently he appears. He's greatly excited and proud and glad, like one who's fearlessly done his duty.
A Jewish boy we were beating up.
What? A Jewish boy? Were you beating him up?
Yes.
What had he done?
Nothing.
He seems puzzled. I look so queer suddenly. Now I snatch my hat and run out of the door as fast as I can.
Come! We'll find this Jewish boy and beg his pardon.
My little boy hurries after me. Doesn't understand a word of it, but he's terribly in earnest.
What's his name?
Nathan.
Nathan! Nathan!
Nobody in the courtyard. We go out into the street.
Nathan!
All in vain. The Jewish boy and his persecutors are blown away into space. So we go and sit up in my room again.
Well, nothing to be done now. I hope you'll meet that Jewish boy someday so that you can give him your hand and ask him to forgive you.
You must tell him that you did it only because you were stupid. But if another time anyone does him any harm, I hope you'll go in and help him and beat up the other fellow as long as you can move a limb. I can see by my little boy's face that he's ready to do what I wish. Oh, no, I aren't wonderful people. You remember David, about whom Dirty reads at school? He was a Jewish boy. The child Jesus, whom everybody worships and loves, although he died 2,000 years ago. He was a Jew, too. My little boy stands with his arms on my knee. Now the old Hebrews rise before us in all their splendor and power. They ride on their camels in coats of many colors, with long beards. Moses and Joseph and his brethren, and Samson and David and Saul. We hear wonderful stories. The walls of Jericho fall at the sound of the trumpet.
And what next? Go on, Father.
The whole day is devoted to Jews. We learn that many of the most famous men in the world are Jews. And when evening comes and Mother sits down at the piano and sings the song which Father loves above all other songs, it appears that the words were written by one Jew and the melody composed by another. My little boy is hot and red when he falls asleep that night. Turns restlessly in bed and talks in sleep.
He's a little feverish.
We're spending the summer in the country. Dog and hens and ducks form our circle of acquaintance. The sun burns us. We eat like farmhands, sleep like guinea pigs, and wake like larks. We get neighbors. They're regular city people. The pearl of the family is Erna. Erna is 5 years old. Her very small face is pale green, with watery blue eyes and yellow curls. She is richly and gaily dressed, and I at once perceive that my little boy's eyes have seen a woman. He's seen the woman that comes to us all at one time or another, and turns our heads with her rustling silks and glossy hair, and wears her soul in her skirts and our poor hearts under her heel. Now comes the perilous moment for Dirty, I say to the mother of my little boy. This time it's my little boy's turn to be superior. He knows the business of the country thoroughly and explains it all to Erna. When he worries the horse, she trembles, impressed with his courage and manliness. When she has a fit of terror at the sight of a hen, he is charmed with her delicacy. Altogether, there's no doubt as to the condition of his heart. One morning, he proposes. He's sitting with his beloved on the lawn. Close to them, her aunt is nursing a rheumatism in the sun. Up in the balcony above, I sit like Providence and see everything. My fun scene.
Erna, you shall be my sweetheart.
Yes.
I have a sweetheart already at home. Her name is Dirty.
This communication naturally by no means lowers Erna's suitor in her eyes. But later, after lunch, he comes up to where his mother and I are sitting and puts his hands in his pockets and looks straight before him.
Father, can't you have two sweethearts?
The question comes quite unexpectedly, and at the moment, I don't know what to answer.
Well?
Yes, you can, but it's wrong. It leads to more fuss and unpleasantness than you can possibly imagine.
Are you so fond of Erna?
Yes.
Do you want to marry her?
Yes.
Well, the thing is settled. We'll write to Dirty and give her notice. Then there's nothing else to be done. I'll write now, and you can give the letter yourself to the post when he comes this afternoon. Take my advice. You'll make her a present of your ball. Then she'll not be so much upset.
Well, she can have my goldfish, too, if she likes.
Excellent. We'll give her the goldfish. Then she'll really have nothing in the world to complain of. My little boy goes away. Presently he returns.
Father, have you written the letter to Dirty?
Not yet, my boy. There's time enough. I shan't forget it.
Oh, Father, I'm so fond of Dirty.
She was certainly a dear little girl.
Father, I'm also so fond of Erna.
We look at each other. This is no joke. Well, perhaps we better wait with the letter till tomorrow. Perhaps it'd be best we talk to Dirty ourselves and get back to town. Then my eyes surprise an indescribable smile on our mother's face. All a woman's incapacity to understand man's honesty is contained within that smile. I resent it greatly. Come on, let's go. My little boy and I go to... is going to school. We can't keep him at home any longer, says his mother. He himself is glad to go, of course, because he doesn't know what school is. I know what it is, and I know also that there's no escape for him. But I'm sick at heart. So we go for our last morning walk along the road where something wonderful has always happened to us. We sit down by the edge of our usual ditch, and suddenly my heart triumphs over my understanding. I just want to tell you that school is a horrid place. You can have no conception of what you'll have to put up with there. They'll tell you that 2 and 2 are 4.
Mother's taught me that already.
Yes, 2 and 2 are never 4. Only very seldom. And that's not all. You'll never have any more time to play in the courtyard with Carl. When he shouts you to come out, you have to sit and read about a lot of horrible old kings who've been dead for hundreds and hundreds of years. They ever existed at all, which I, for my part, simply don't believe. My little boy doesn't understand me. He sees that I'm sad and puts his hand in mine.
Mother says that you must go to school to become a clever boy. Mother says that Carl...
And see how he gallops up the steps without as much as turning to look back at me. Here ends this story about my little boy. What more can there be to tell? He's no longer mine. Handed him over to society.
There was nothing else to be done.
Really? There's nothing else to be done? I wonder. Small boys have a bad time of it, you know.
They had a worse time of it in the old days.
Ah, that's poor comfort. The world's still full of parents and teachers who shake their stupid heads and turn up their old eyes and cross their flat chests with horror at the wickedness of youth. Children are so disobedient, they say, so naughty, so self-willed, and talk so disrespectfully to their elders. What do? We who know better.
We do what we can.
She says it in such a way. She looks at me with two such sensible eyes. It is so strong and so true. But I suddenly think things look quite well for our little boy. I become quiet and cheerful like yourself. Teachers of his better look out, though. My little boy, for all I care, may take from them all the English and geography and history that he can, but they shan't throw dust in his eyes about the important things. I shall keep him
away with his English and geography and history.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Carl Aval's My Little Boy. Dix Davis was the little boy, and Ruth Warwick was mother. You remember Ruth as the first Mrs. Citizen Kane? Now she's returned to the Mercury to play in a new picture, a thriller. Norman Foster just started directing it last week. Joe Cotton and I wrote it, and we're all very excited about it. It's called Journey into Fear. Also present in tonight's cast were Ray Collins, who appeared somewhat obscurely, but excellently for all that, as the old gentleman on the train.
I hope you enjoyed that show. That was the Mercury Lady Esther Theater, My Little Boy, with Orson Welles starring and narrating, along with Dix Davis in the role of the little boy, from January 19th of 1942. Going to end it just a little bit early tonight, but that's okay. That leaves us more room for talk. So thank you again for listening. I'm John Gassman, and this has been Radio Out of the Past. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun to put together.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Two different types of shows, but a lot of fun.
Definitely.
A lot of Orson Welles stuff out there, and all of the I Love Adventure shows are available. So if you like what you heard, you can go collect a lot of other stuff. So
there was. Sorry, go ahead, Marcia.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Rick.
No, it wasn't Rick. It was me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Michael. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Go.
No, I was just going to say that there were a few dropouts. I don't know if it was on this end or...
I know that the recording did have some dropouts, and that particular show was not, apparently, it was incomplete in Orson Welles' recordings. He only had the first 15 minutes. So we had, if the whole show had been there, I would have gone with that one because it would have been better sound. So that's the only copy I have. Maybe there's another one around somewhere else. But.
Oh, okay. No complaints. I was just wondering if it was the internet here. And I'd never heard Orson Welles interact with any children before. And I thought that was pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I agree.
I noticed the same thing. I thought maybe it's the internet.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I did notice the dropouts, but I figured, it's part of the recording or something.